All right, you guys, I am currently struggling with a pinched nerve in my neck, and if you have ever had one, you know the pain. So I am feeling super thankful for today's sponsor, Tenassi. Tenassi's CBD CBDA is 2 times better than CBD alone and better than over-the-counter ibuprofen, acetaminophen, and aspirin. It helps soothe and relieve my aches and pains, like my pinched nerve, and it's great for sleep and anxiety, so I put it on right before bed. Tenassi was discovered by a team of chemists and biologists at Middle Tennessee State University, and 5% of all revenue is given back to the university partner for ongoing research. It is THC-free and comes in a range of products. I love the topicals, but you can also choose from soft gels, gummies, and tinctures. Satisfaction is guaranteed. Try Tenassi for 30 days, and if you don't love it, you get a full refund. Go to Tenassi.com and use code MOM to get 25% off at checkout. That's TANASI.com to get 25% off your first order with promo code MOM. Since learning the truth about alcohol over 4 years ago, I've become pretty skeptical about anything that seems too good to be true. You know, like alcohol. If you're like me and you can spot a too good to be true health hack from a mile away, congrats, you're a skeptic too. Ritual knows that every good skeptic deserves a multivitamin that exceeds our standards. I take Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus every morning because it has high quality and traceable key ingredients in clean, bioavailable forms. It's gentle on an empty stomach and has a minty essence in every bottle that helps make taking my multis actually enjoyable. No more shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/sobermom. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/sobermom for 25% off. Hi, welcome to the Sober Mom Life podcast. I'm your host, Suzanne, of My Kind of Sweet and the Sober Mom Life on Instagram. If you are a mama who has questioned your relationship with alcohol at times, if you're wondering if maybe it's making motherhood harder, this is for you. I will be having candid, honest, funny conversations with other moms who have also thought, maybe motherhood is better without alcohol. Is it possible? We'll chat and we'll talk about all things sobriety and how we've found freedom in sobriety. I don't consider myself an alcoholic. You don't have to either. And maybe life is brighter without alcohol. I hope you will join us on this journey, and I'm so excited to get started. Hello and welcome to the Real Sober Mom Chats on the Sober Mom Life podcast. You guys know these stories are near and dear to my heart. These are stories from women who are in the Sober Mom Life community, in the Sober Mom Life Cafe. And for a lot of them, it's the first time telling their story. These are real moms. It's like the Real Housewives, but without the booze. Don't forget, if you want to share your story, come and join us. We now have 2 options for memberships. We have the Sober Mom Life community. For $5.95 a month, you get to connect with sober and sober curious women all day long in the chat and in the feed. And then you also get access to our Tuesday peer support Zoom meeting at 11 a.m. Central. And also the cafe. The cafe is $25 a month and you get so many meetings. You get access to 8 weekly peer support meetings plus our monthly book club. You get your own feed and chat where you get to connect with the ladies. You also get to go on things like the retreat with us that's coming up at the end of February. And just so many other amazing things. Come and join us. We would love to have you and enjoy the Real Sober Moms. Jay, welcome to the Sober Mom Life and the Real Sober Mom Chats. Yay.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. I'm excited to hear your story. Before we talk about where you are in sobriety and what's going on now, let's go back. Let's talk about alcohol. Where does it start for you?
Yeah. Well, so I'm from New England. I'm from a really small town in New England. And like its catchphrase is, you know, we're a drinking town with a fishing problem, right? So one of those. So
that's funny.
Of your Midwest stories where it's just in the culture, I totally understand that.
Yeah. What state is it?
Massachusetts.
Okay. Okay.
And, you know, I remember my parents always drank. They were daily drinkers, but I never recall seeing either of them drunk ever.
Okay.
So it was just always a glass of wine at dinner, always a beer at dinner, but I never saw, you know, binge drinking. I don't think I've ever really, maybe once or twice, I've seen either of them over consume.
Okay. So that's interesting. So it wasn't like you didn't feel unsafe. Like alcohol was kind of present,
No. But
it wasn't this scary kind of unsafe feeling. Okay. That's interesting.
Totally. It was just what you do to unwind at the end of the day.
Yes.
And I remember having my first sip of Miller Lite when I was like 5 or something, you know, but like in the old can that now they brought back, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. So that was kind of childhood. I remember my first time drinking actually, besides like sneaking like peppermint schnapps into a smoothie, like when I was in
a milkshake.
Like a milkshake.
Okay. Yes. Peppermint schnapps. You said that and I immediately got a headache. I'm like, oh, my head. Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. But like my first time actually drinking, I remember I was a freshman in high school and it was this group of, you know, sophomores. And there were a couple of us who were freshmen and handing around a bottle of Captain Morgan's in an empty bottle of Mountain Dew. Like, so it wasn't even it was like stolen from the house or something. And you're just taking sips of it. And it's just so disgusting.
Yes.
Like I don't even remember if there was a chaser. Yeah. It was just gross. And that first time someone actually got alcohol poisoning.
Oh no.
I mean, they were okay. They were okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Everyone left. I ended up staying with him. I had known this kid since I was like born.
Oh.
Everybody ran and panicked. I was like one of the only ones that stayed while his parents and his brother came. And, you know, my parents, you know, I always got in less trouble if I told the truth. Right. So like they were super proud of me for like doing that and like helping. And that ended up happening a couple of times.
Wow.
Where like I was around someone who like they were, you know, unconscious and like foaming at the mouth, and I would stay and like call. It was right. Terrifying.
Yeah.
But also it was just like, that's what we did in high school.
Were there any like conversations afterwards, like with your parents or with the adults being like, hey, this is what that was. This is kind of why, let's talk about, or just kind of, this was the time when we just didn't talk about it.
Kind of the time when we didn't talk about it. My mom didn't drink in high school. My dad definitely did. And I knew that. And so, you know, my dad would be like the next morning, you know, handing me like Listerine strips, be like, you get me in trouble when you come home. Like, kind of joking, just like cover it up better, right?
Okay. Like, so not like, let's talk about like how we feel about alcohol, but like, how are we going to do this better? Like in a more orderly fashion. Come on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But then they couldn't really say anything also because I was still making the good decision.
Right. Like, I'm proud of you. You stayed with your friend who was like going to die of alcohol poisoning. You did the right thing. And then it's like, but wait, like, should we zoom out?
Totally.
Yeah.
I think I also had the insulation that my dad, again, a small town. My dad was this really well-known firefighter whose best friend was the police chief.
Ooh,
so I felt really kind of protected. So I think, you know, I also had that like layer of insulation, I think. But I remember by my senior year of high school, me and a friend, like another girlfriend, being proud that the two of us could split a 30 pack of Bud Light.
Wow. Yeah. Yes. Like a badge of honor.
Totally.
Which is, and now you look back and you're like, holy shit, that's a lot. Like that.
Yes. Disgusting.
Yeah. And gross.
Yeah. I went to college in the Midwest. I went to college in Ohio, went to Miami of Ohio. And, you know, typical college party school, right? Like a lot of frats, a lot of drinking, all that stuff. The grossest thing I remember is like when I would be hungover going to class, if I went out on like a Thursday. When I like was too hungover and coffee didn't appeal to me, I mixed Red Bull with orange juice. And that's what I would walk to class in for, like the caffeine and like the sugar, like, and it worked. But now thinking back, I'm like, oh,
God. You're like, how can I make this Red Bull sweeter? Like how
and
can
my roommates would be like, that's disgusting. And I'm like, it works.
Yes, totally. Yeah. College, a lot of question marks for me too. Like what? Yeah,
your brain, totally.
Like it's very clear our brains just weren't fully formed yet.
Right. Yeah. Totally. And then, just more binge drinking. And then I think moved to California right after college. And kind of still just like the area that I moved to in San Diego was just such a party area that it felt like college continued.
Yes.
And, you know, still a lot of binge drinking, right? Just a lot of like weekends and parties and bars and stupid decisions and a lot of stuff. Never really examined it. It's just, you know, you don't think twice about it. You just think it's like what you do. I didn't think anybody else was doing anything different because no one around me was doing anything different.
Yes.
Right. And then, 20s and 30s kind of tamed down. And then it kind of transitioned to mirror my parents, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, I'll be 40 in a week and a half.
Oh, happy early birthday.
I know. Thank you.
Yeah.
I can count, you know, on probably two hands from like 25 until now, or until I stopped last year, how many times I was drunk. Like it kind of just went away, but I continued this pattern of like unwinding at the end of the day with a glass of wine or a beer or something.
What do you think changed like from the binge drinking to like, okay, that period of my life is done and now I'm going to drink quote unquote like an adult or like my parents did?
Yeah. I think it was just lifestyle. Like I moved out of that party town. I got a job. I was working. Then I was in grad school right before I got married. So I got married in 2012. So like, 2011, 2012, I was working almost full time, like 32, 36 hours a week. I was in grad school full time and I had a practicum for my like a free like an internship for 24 hours a week. So I had an Excel spreadsheet that like documented every single hour of every single day, including yoga, including fun.
No room
for it. Yeah. And it just shifted. And, you know, I probably need to take that back. There's more than 10 times that I got drunk since like 25.
You're like, fine, I'll use my feet too.
Yeah. But it really did shift. It changed its purpose. I think, right?
The goal wasn't to go out and like just get shit faced
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. It was to unwind. It was to relax. And it was, you know, less of, I had a group of solid friends that I didn't feel like I needed that like social lubricant, right? Like to just lose all inhibition.
Right.
Yeah. So I did a bunch of cleanses, you know, or challenges where I would take 21 days off and not drink or, you know, 30 days, or I think that was before like Dry January was a thing. It was like, you know, but, I was examining it and I'm like, ooh, that feels good to not be on. And then you just start right back up again after the 21 days.
You're like,
I really
enjoyed that break from alcohol. All right, get back to it. Here we go.
Yeah.
Totally.
Totally. And then got pregnant and had my daughter when I was 34. She was born in 2018. Pregnancy was like such a highlight of my life. I felt so good. I really am one of those people that is so annoying and was like, I had the glow and I had more energy aside from the first trimester. And I, you know, just felt so in love with the whole process and didn't miss drinking at all. And I totally understand why you say pregnancy doesn't count because it doesn't.
No.
But then looking back in this past year, I'm like, wait, was that because I wasn't drinking? Like, did it feel so good? Because it was it the hormones? Like, what was it?
Right.
And wondering how much of a significance actually not drinking had in that presence and that joy. And I think there's more of it than I thought.
Yeah. And then you were just like, oh, well, it's obviously because I'm growing a human and the hormones and the.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. And then she was born and I, you know, slowly it took a while for me to kind of get my taste back for it. But, you know, after time, it just kind of creeped back in and, you know, ended up looking like it did before, where at the end of the day or when the witching hour came, right? When, you know, when you're just exhausted. We do a lot of travel. We bought a van, like one of like a Sprinter-esque type van when my daughter was 2 months old, and we built it out. And so we did a ton of awesome road trips, so like hiking.
That always sounds amazing to me. Like, that sounds incredible. Was it amazing?
It was amazing. In that, you know, like you just set up camp and you have a glass of wine, and it just the habits that you tie in the relationship that you tie to different things and processes is
totally,
yeah, it's just,
and just mindless, right? You're not, it's not even like you're totally making the decision. You're like, well, no, this is just what we're doing.
Exactly. Yeah. And then when COVID hit, my anxiety skyrocketed. I was prescribed Zoloft for the first time.
Yeah.
I've always had anxiety, but I've been able to manage it. And it just, you know, skyrocketed with COVID. My daughter was 18 months old at that time. And I, you know, was trying to work from home and be with her and, you know, all the stuff that we know that we went through as moms during that time.
Yes.
So drinking kind of increased, not a lot, not like alarmingly, but just like maybe it happened earlier, or instead of having one, I would have two, right? Like just gradually creeping in and like creating new habits also, right? Which I think that's how I look at my drinking, is just like a habit. I could have one. But then I'd be so, the shame that I would feel after having one would be the same as it would be if having more, because like, why did I even have that one? Like, why did I have to have that one when I didn't even feel it? It doesn't even make a difference. Like, why?
Okay. I love that you said the shame's the same, because that was at the end, that was the same for me, that I was like, oh, it doesn't matter if I'm getting, if I'm blacking out or if I have one, like the shame that I feel in my bones is the same. And so,
yeah,
like what was your perspective on alcohol at the time? Like, did you connect it to your anxiety at all?
No, I looked at it like, I'm so anxious, I need to have it. Like the drink will calm me down.
Yeah.
Like, and that was it was one of the coping skills in my arsenal of dealing and coping with my anxiety.
And was the prescriber for Zoloft, which I'm on Zoloft too. Hey, team Zoloft. Mm-hmm. Did they ask anything about alcohol, or like, what's the alcohol use, or like any sort of information about it?
I think I lied. I think I minimized it, right? Like, yeah, I'll have a couple of weeks.
And then they're like, cool, here and there. No more questions. Moving on. Yep. Yeah. Pretty typical. Yeah. Yep.
I'm not on Zoloft anymore, which is a really cool thing.
Good,
not
that's amazing.
It's not good to be on it, but it's also, you know, I kind of graduated. There are days where I'm like, oh, I should be, but.
No, that's amazing. And I'll clarify, I'm not on it for generalized anxiety anymore, because I don't have anxiety, which is even just bananas to say. I'm on it for OCD. And so I will be on it for the rest of my life, because OCD is very dangerous to white knuckle. And I
totally
know that. And totally. So, but yes, for generalized anxiety, like, how good does it feel not to have just this general feeling of dread?
Totally.
Right?
Totally.
Yes.
Yeah. And yeah, so I think I would take a day off and be like so stoked that I could take, you know, that I, or like a couple of days, I'm like, yes, okay, so this isn't a problem. And then I go right back, and I'm a firm believer, and I love how you say like AA kept you drinking, because hands down here also, right? Like,
yes.
Did I qualify for that? No, I didn't even know I could stop.
Right.
I was just in that like turmoil of moderation, right? Like just that gnarly feedback loop of, okay, I took a day off. Awesome. I don't have a problem, but I don't like this. This feels like I have a problem.
Or like, I must be doing this wrong. Like there must be a better way to drink. Like if I could just figure out this, like the key to drinking better, because I'm not doing it right. Yeah. I like that you said gnarly feedback loop. That sounds, I don't know if it's Massachusetts or California or both, but it's
that's California.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it is a gnarly feedback loop.
Yes, it is. So I did Dry Januaries and started right back up. And like you said, like it just picked back up, right? It gradual or whatever. So last December, I watched something that Annie Grace does, like on trying to, you know, get people into her coaching. I'm like, we should do this. It was like $700. I'm like, you know, I don't, that's a lot of money. And yeah. I was talking to my husband about it and he's like, no, we'll just try to do Dry January and see what happens. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. He's like, that's free. Dry January is free. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And you know, I think the important thing to say is that I would have these conversations with him and he's like, you don't have a problem, like, which was helpful, but also not.
Because he didn't feel the shame that you felt, right? And I think exactly. that's really important to know that, like, when we feel the shame, we could share a life with somebody and they don't know.
Right.
And so then they're telling us, like, no, you're fine. Like, that kind of feedback from husbands is common. It's like, I think you're overreacting. You're fine. Like, you don't have to quit. You're fine. But we know how we feel. And even if we can't say it, like, no, actually – I know you don't know this and I know you don't understand and you don't have to. I think that that's really important to know that, like, it's okay if our partners don't understand that the shame that I feel when I drink is corrosive and I don't like it anymore. And I think that we don't know to say that. We don't even know we can say that because then it's like, oh, good. Well, report to AA. You're going to rehab, you know? And you're like, wait, totally. No, but it's not that either. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then did you do Dry January together?
He did Damp January. I did Dry January. And something felt – I'd done Dry January, Sober September before. And I sat down on – what was it? January 2nd because the first – we had that New Year's Eve, we had friends and my daughter's friend, like a family sleepover. And then mimosas on the first. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to start today. And then we had a couple of beers in the fridge and we went to the mountain and skied and snowboarded on the second. And so, okay, I'll start tomorrow. It was like, I think a Monday or whatever. I'm not sure, but.
I mean, starting on a Monday is always good. I love that. I always, no, I'm the same. I always do this with sugar, which I'm like, well, obviously I can't start today. It's Wednesday. Like, who the hell starts anything on a Wednesday? Nobody, a monster.
And every year I try to do this introspective, like, journal workbook called Unravel Your Year. It's where you pick a word of the year. It's amazing. It's this woman, Susanna Conway, who puts out this workbook, and you kind of process through the last year. Okay. And you set intentions for the next year. I don't do resolutions, but every year I do like a word that kind of ties any goals in together of what you want to bring more of. And I remember Matt took my daughter out, and so I could just have some time in the house quiet to do this after we had gotten back from the mountain. And I had like a beer at the mountain, and then I'm like, well, I need a little bit of a buzz or something, like, to the habit of having like a drink while I did this or something to get the creative juices flowing. And I remember like mixing that disgusting like pink peach stuff. I can't even remember now. It's like the big drink, Aperol.
Oh, like an Aperol spritz thing?
Yeah, like an Aperol spritz. And I just like...
Did you mix it with Red Bull and orange juice and Mountain Dew and Captain Morgan? Okay.
But that's all we had in the house because we were planning to start Dry January. And I was just like, why am I doing this?
Right.
And then I was like, I'm done. Like, it was in that moment, something clicked and I knew I was done. I knew that like this was going to be different. And I really went into that Dry January last year knowing that it was going to be different.
Wow.
And so, you know, I read Annie Grace. You were in my ear like every day.
I'm sorry.
No, like I owe so much to you. Aww. And you're like, thank you.
Thank you.
And I think the thing that stuck with me the most that really clicked is like in one of your Dry January podcasts last year, you were like, you guys, the 30 days is like the first mile. And I was like, okay, I'm not a runner. I'm a sprinter. I'm not a distance runner. So like that didn't click, but I backpack and I hike.
Ooh, yeah.
And every time I'm on a backpacking trip, like the first mile, the voice in my head is like, oh my God, this sucks. I can't do this. You're so weak.
Yes. Like, stop what you're doing. What are you doing? This is the worst idea you've ever had. Yes. Just stop now. Just, yeah.
it's over. Just don't do it.
Yes.
And so I'm like, okay, I just had a different mindset. So I'm like, I knew I was going to do like, I was shooting for like 90 or 100 days. And in mid-February, a friend of ours owns a brewery. And so we went to the brewery and I had like half of a beer. And I did not like how it made me feel at all. And I was, okay, good data point.
Yes.
Good data collection. And then I was just about 100 days and we went to a new friend's house. So we've known him for like 15 years. He from early in moving to San Diego, and they just moved to our area. And I was meeting his girlfriend for the first time. And it was an instance where I would have had a lot of social anxiety, a lot of like anticipatory anxiety leading up, and I had none. And I was like, wow, this is interesting.
Right.
I had no anxiety. And I was getting ready and I'm like, okay, this feels cool. We got there and, you know, multiple times, what can I get you to drink? What can I get you to drink? And I had brought in, I brought like my own, like a couple of NA beers, and like a couple of seltzer waters. And, you know, my daughter, she was 4 at the time, overheard like him saying like multiple times, like, what can I get you to drink? And my daughter answered for me and said, my mom doesn't really drink alcohol anymore.
Oh.
And it was like this pivotal night where I was like, my anxiety is down. And I'm like, yeah, I just did Dry January and I'm keeping it going. I'm almost at 100 days and I'm going to see what happens. But I think I'm done. And that's been kind of my answer.
And the fact that she noticed, yeah. Right? And she was aware.
Right. Well, I had mentioned it to her. Like I had talked, you know, just like, and, you know, yeah, you can share all of my drinks now. Right. And I think that is the biggest thing that she noticed. And that's all it meant to her, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, and being able to drive my husband home after he had like so many glasses of red wine and waking up that morning, like in getting ready for this, I looked at my old gratitude and the morning after that, I was grateful for waking up early, coffee and reading that morning and not being hungover. And, you know, my husband woke up after like too much red wine. I don't think there's anything worse than too much red wine.
Oh,
it's just
worst.
Like this headache that you can just, I can like feel it right now.
And I love that when it's like a sliding doors moment and you're like, look at me and look at you.
Yes.
And like, yay.
Totally.
You don't even have to say anything. You're just like, oh, good morning.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a turning point. And then a couple of weeks after that, my daughter and I went to Florida to go visit my parents and a high school friend who I had told that I, you know, wasn't drinking and it wasn't a big deal. And she offered me like one of my favorite drinks, like Casamigos tequila with like a splash of orange juice and Spindrift. I'm like, sure, you can make me one.
Yeah.
I had like a handful of sips and I had an instant headache and I didn't have the rest. And that's the last, and that was in April of last year. But I consider myself a full year sober. I'm not counting, like I don't count. I'm like, I'm a year sober.
Good.
I'm a year alcohol free.
Yes.
Right? Like those are data point collections. Like there's so much value in those. And the counting days and the restart, I think, is just, it's not for me.
Good. Yeah, it can feel punitive.
For some people, but yeah.
That's what stuck out to me in your story as you're telling me this. It's like, and I know you started off by being like, no, I'm like a year sober. I'm like, good. And when you said all of those things, I'm like, no, good. You are a year sober. Because
yeah.
There's such a difference between this like mindless habitual drinking, right? When you're just like going to put Aperol with Gatorade. You didn't do that, but you know, whatever.
And, yeah.
But then just like having a sip and being like, oh, holy shit. I now can see this is ethanol. I now can feel how it's affecting me. I now like my eyes are wide open. And that is so mm-hmm. much more valuable than white knuckling it and being like, no, just so that I can get this day and count this day. It's like, no, that day probably counts more than any other
totally.
Days that you went through. Right. And so you better count that day. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I think I made a list of firsts and, you know, first camping trip, first van trip, first birthday, first 4th of July, all the things. And yeah, I think my anxiety has plummeted, right? Like
amazing.
I think is the most telling thing. You know, we have a good friend who also stopped drinking and he was like 6 months ahead of me. So he stopped drinking the summer before I did. So he's a year and a half sober now. And he told my husband, who told me, like, 90 days is when your, like, brain chemicals return, like your serotonin and your dopamine. And at 90 to 100 days, I remember, I'm like, oh my gosh, I haven't felt joy like this in so long.
Yes.
And I think all the feelings come back, right? Like, when I'm anxious, yes, sometimes it feels worse. But when I feel joy, it's so much better. When I feel calm, it's calmer. When I feel sad, it can be sadder, but it's all the things feel more, which I think is how we're supposed to be feeling.
Yes, right? It is. Who knew? And that we can.
Right. I'm a therapist. And you know, one of the things I tell my clients all the time to reduce that, you know, that judgment loop we have in our heads about how we feel is, we are all just humans, like, navigating and having this human experience. And every emotion we feel is part of that. And just not dulling it with any substance, you know, with alcohol is like a substance. Yeah.
Right. It's so true. And that we just don't even give ourselves enough credit to know that we can feel our feelings, all of them. All right. of them.
And right? we're supposed
like,
to.
Yes, we're yeah. supposed to. It's a guide for us. Like, you're alive. Like, and that's great, you know?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, what's your favorite part about sobriety? And like, if you could tell somebody who's kind of just wrapping up dry January and being like, mm-hmm. okay, great, yeah, fine. I feel okay. But like, what's ahead?
I think all of the new things that you can experience sober, right? Like, you know, for someone who's just wrapping up dry January, I'd say like get to 90 and then see, right? Because you just ran the first mile and it sucks.
It sucks.
It's so hard. It sucks.
Yeah.
It only gets better. It only gets better. And even I'm still experiencing all like the novelties of, you know, I've done a lot of the firsts, but it's still, now it's a whole new journey of getting more time. And
yeah, it just doesn't wear off. And it's like, I'm mm-hmm. still experiencing first, and I hope I always will, right? And like noticing and just being like, oh no, this is what it feels like to just be alive and be awake and like notice and be clear-minded and all of the things, right? And it doesn't wear off.
Yeah.
Like, I hope it never does.
Right.
Yeah.
It never gets old being able to drive at any time. And I know that I am changing things for my daughter, right? Like, in hindsight, like looking back, and I've had conversations with my parents about this over the past year. My mom is one of those unicorns, right? Who, like, when I say she drinks every night, she, in looking back, like, that's how I viewed it as a kid. But now she pours like a small glass of white wine with like 15 ice cubes, and she will sip on that the entire night and like, but maybe have like 5 sips of it. And she dumps out like a full glass of like watered down wine.
She is a unicorn.
So she's not drinking a full glass of wine, right? Every night. But just also witnessing like what that looked like for me as a kid and the, what that, you know, set up.
Yes.
Really, it never gets old modeling to my kid that I can be fun and silly and goofy and have a happy, full life and not need alcohol.
Yes. Oh, and like with no shame, with no shame,
right.
like
right.
shedding that shame is like mm-hmm. the most freeing, I think too. Oh, mm-hmm. thank you. This is going to help so many women. And like I always say, I think that these are the most important stories to tell, where we thought we didn't qualify and we thought that we just had to do it better and something was wrong with us. And then when we realized like, oh, wait, I could just step out of it into freedom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These are the stories that I needed to hear. And listening to these stories also, you know, helped so much. So like I said, you were in my ear all last year.
Oh.
And I appreciate what you're doing so much. It's so needed.
Thank you. I'm honored yeah. to even be a part of your journey. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Sober Mom Life. If you loved it, please rate and review it wherever you listen. 5 stars is amazing. Also, follow me on Instagram at The Sober Mom Life. Okay, I'll see you next week. I'm going to go reheat my coffee. Bye.
I'm Madeline, and I'm the host of the Happiest Sober podcast. I got sober in my 20s after a decade of gray area drinking, and the greatest plot twist of all time was realizing that alcohol, the thing that I thought made my life the most happy and fun and exciting, was actually the exact thing preventing me from living my happiest and best life. My mom is 40 years sober, and she joins me on my podcast very often. I like to call her my part-time co-host, and I also bring you solo episodes where I share my top tips, tricks, and mindset shifts in sobriety, and lots of how-tos for navigating all the things sober, from weddings to parties to holidays to bachelorette parties to trips. I'm also joined by so many guests who come on and share their sober stories, and they're all so, so inspiring. I'm here to show you that life doesn't end when you quit drinking. In fact, it's very much the opposite. And no matter what your relationship was with alcohol, life can be the absolute happiest when you're sober. New episodes come out every Tuesday. You can listen to Happiest Sober podcast wherever you get your podcasts.